Carol Pickell with an orange is an irrigation rupture and bouquet rocking the lower head of us. One of the milder borders of the dusty durable is the sweet taste of a lemon. And it was limes, a dark tooled green, which forgave the barefoot sailors bringing citrus to new dry lands. Come quite you with that quip. Let a rat make jam of you in her beardy house. Blood orange children, raspberry blood in the glass. Look for the 5 o'clock shadow on their cheeks. Those are full of blood. And easy, only pick the ones that relax off in your hand. Below Hollywood, as everywhere, the trees of each grove appear as fantastically open treasure sacks, tied only at the ground. I went up to Jeff Page country with a mate of mine who's got a big boat and a big shallow boat. And we went for an explorer of the Karankura. And the Page family had their headquarters just beyond the limit of navigation up at Copmanhurst. So I called this farm Sunday on the Country River. After caramel airs of the Sugar Islands and their carrying handle bridges, we skimmed over salt rainwater that was reached across by smoke. Ospreys flew or sat up castled on sticks, and the shore trees were algal and creeper. The dyke low country on parole from floods began foreshadowing inland jacaranda. Below a two-deck bridge in Cathedral City, water silver brown as polarized shade, shook ahead of us and splitted two behind us like innumerable catch. We tied up under high oiled gondola poles, fig trees that starburst the pavements we clubbed on, but the blackboards lunch was scrubbed on sent us away to cast off for more vista. Pelicans still luffed aloft, now into air to breathe the cattle. And front veranda houses, land with equality, perched atop increasing bluffs. Only a historic Bedouin tent of vast corrugated iron presided further back, and turning under layered cliffs, we kept causing long wing skidder takeoffs. We were nearly to Pages when our boat bumped and started travelling. It gets hairy from here, we said, and there was hair too, muddy blonde, growing just underwater. I hope you don't know what this poem's about. I hope you've never experienced it. It's a thing that happens to you in with the disease called depression, and perhaps called panic attack. The body had a nightmare. Awake. No need of a movie. No need of light to keep hips and shoulders rotating in bed on the gimbals of wet eyes. Pounding heart, chest pains. Should it be the right arm hurting? The brain was a void of a blasted out chamber, shreds of speech in there, shatters of lust and prayer. No one can face their heart or turn their back on it. Bowel stumbled the bowl, emptied and emptied again, till the gut was a train crawling in its own tunnel, slowly dragging the nightmare down with it, below heart level. You would not have died. Your fear had been too great, but to miss the ambulance moment. Relax, in time your hourglass will be reversed again. Lateral dimensions, I don't know if this is one poem or a whole string of little journal poems, so I think it's probably bad. Lateral dimensions. Cloudy night, not enough stars to make frost. Haunted house, one room the cattle never would go in. Mowing done, each thing's a ship again on a wide green harbour. Purification, newspaper soaked in rain before they wreck. An airliner high, life falling in from space to run up on. Rodeo Woolley, wins every time, then back on the track. Only one char of your amber necklace holds the once living passenger. Afternoon plains, the only hill ahead is the rising moon. Eels liquid jostle through the grass that night. joking in a foreign language, everyone looks down. The curious of history, many decide not to know any. All the colours are inside a pumpkin, smelly forest in rain. I think we do remember getting born. We can't remember it consciously, but I had to go out of it. I'll propose this subject to my mind and see what it throws up. The pretense that I could remember being born. And it was in a village called Naviac up the, the north coast, not that far up the north coast, about 200 kilometres. Birthplace. Right in that house over there, an atom of shark spilled my sample. And I was extruded, brain cuffed in my terror, in my soap. My heart wrung its two already working hands together. But all the other animals started waking up in my body. The stale water frog, the starving worm. My nerves, not red globe, was filling up with panic writing. Back wings in my chest caught fire. And I screamed in common hiccups, all before focus in the blazing cold. Then I was replugged and ensued, although I knew blood that tasted. Nothing else intense happened to us in this village. My 2 years of school life here were my last in my own culture. The one I still beheld to in this place in working hours. I love the Rye Eagle Humane and drive in to be held to it. Blueprints. Whatever the great religions offer, it is afterlife their people want. Heaven, paradise, higher reincarnations, together or apart. For these they will love God or butter karma. Afterlife. Wherever it already exists, people will call it a ship's framework or suffocate in punishment and misdirection. They will conjure it down on their beaches and their pool play streets, inject it, marry it or the secular withholds any evasions that is aimed upwards. It must go declaratively to hell. But an accident of consciousness between two eternities of oblivion? All of us have done one of those eternities already on our ear. After the second, we require an afterlife greater and stainier than science gives us now. Life like, then unlike what mortal life has been. This is a little appendix to that film. It's called Blueprint 2. Life after death, with all the difficult people away in a separate felicity. We've all got our list of people. That will go to heaven, we just don't want to meet them. I had a moral conundrum once. I had to decide it fairly fast. I said, there was a horse in front of me which I could run into with the car, you know, coming around the corner upon this horse standing across the road. I could kill the horse or I could take a risk of breaking my own neck by driving off the road down a steep bank. And the farm is called the Mare out on the road. Sliding around the corner on gravel, and there was a mare across the road and a steep embankment down to the paddock. The moment was crammed with just two choices. Sliding fast with the brakes shoaling gravel, 5 metres down, and would the car capsize? The moment was crammed with just two choices. One of two accidents would have to happen. The poor horse was a beautiful innocent, was her own and never let a grudge go by. No court case, just family slurs for life. Sliding fast with the brakes shoaling gravel. The mare was expanding, would she run? Leave a gap before or behind to drive through? No chance. She grew in moist astonishment, 5 metres down, and would the car capsize? Blood hoof collision would be now without a swerve, would the car explode in flames below? It plunged a slant away down, the door roared up like a hatch. No court case, just family slurs for life. Because the old man didn't believe in accidents, nor in gestures. The mare trots off ahead of boots hobbling to find the old man's son. The poor horse was a beautiful innocent. The breeder's son on their tractor was treated, was full of apologies and shame, reaching the mouthful, glass weaving car back up in secret because the old man didn't believe it, accidents. Psalms 105, set apart with four possible scriptures. I'll just read you all. The six are stallion that rest bold as his supple fine rehearsal, and his progeny drop in the grass like little loose bagpipes. Wet nap and knotty drones, they lie glazing and learning air. Then they lever upright, wobbly, narrow as two dimensions. They nuzzle their mother's groin for the yogurt that makes girth. This story happened in 1950, Melbourne Cup Day 1950, when my wife and her brother were coming to Australia as migrants. Brother-in-law Steve saw this poem, it's called Pressure. A man with a neutral place in the Great Migration, clutching his shined suitcase, queuing at the customs station. Please, yes, you, open your suitcase. He may not have understood. Make it snappy, open it, come on. Looking down out of focus did no good. Tell him to open his suitcase. The language was behind him with pressure. He hugged his case in stark reluctance. Tell him put suitcase on the counter. Hasps popped, cut cords fell clear, and there was nothing in the suitcase. This is a rather grimmer story again. It's not as the other poem in the book about depression. True story, I'm sad, sad to say. Death from exposure. That winter, we missed her stark face at work. Days till she was found under his veranda. Even student torturers used to go in awe. She had zero small talk. It made no sense she had his key. It made no sense all she could have done. Depression exhausts the mind. She phones, no response. She drives up straight to his place in the mountains, down the side road, crossed all day. You knock. What next? You can't manage what next. Back at last, he finds her car. She's crawled in under among the firewood. Quite often the world is not round. There's a bloke at home who comes and repairs our house occasionally and needs it. He does handyman jobs for all sorts of people. He knows almost every handyman trade. But what he can't do is read. He's dyslexic. So he's got a completely different culture. It's a cultivator of stories and skills and things. And I called this poem, this poem, The Shining Slopes and Plains. Having tacked loose tin panels of a car shed together, Peter the carpenter walked straight up the ladder, no hands, and buttons down the lapels of the roof. Now his light weight is on the house overhead, and then he's back down, bearing long straps of a wiry green alpine grass, root woven, finest fur that has grown in our metal rain gutters. Bird seeded or fetched by the wind, it has had 20 years up there being nourished on car dust. On washings of radiant iron, on nesting debris, in which peach-sized trees had also sprouted. Now tangled on the ground, and the laundry grips jowls of coloured weight, below one walking, stuck, go, up and down overlaps, to fix the biplane houses of Australia. When I was a kid in Nabiac, I'd say there's only two Nabiac farms in this country. That's two more than most of them. The Pacific Highway had a bridge, nearly a complete suite of bridges all up the North Coast, but there was none at Nabiac across the Lowander River, and it was just a low old causeway. It was always the first place to be cut by floods. And we kids used to walk through the water to show people that the causeway was there and give them the follow-ups. And it was a great little learner, two people used to pass, you know, 2 and 6, 5, 5, 10, or something. Bob was called Upright Pier Across. It's like when every year flooding in our river would be first to cut the two-lane Pacific Highway. We kids would pedal down barefoot to the long ripple of the causeway and wave deep in freezing fawn energy ahead of wind springs slashing rain. We were all innocent authority. The through traffic was mostly wise enough not to try our back roads. So we'd draw the North Coast back together, its trips, its mercy dashes, its loads. Slow dancing up to our neighbour, maybe with a whole train of followers. Each step was a stance of the force coming, all from one side between shores. Every landing brought us 10 bobs and silver, and a facing lot with a band on Roundmaker, wanting us to prove again what we had just proved, that the causeway was there. We could have, but never did, lose our footing, or tangle in the drowning fence, from which wire might be cut for towing. And then bridges came, high level, an ant log sailed on beneath affluence. This one's the only poem in the book that was written as a song. It's a set of rounds for Newcastle, a city I'm very fond of. And it's really just a history of Newcastle. Tall sails went slack, so high did Nobby stand, so they fell him in the surf to choke on sand. And convicts naked as legs in trousers, hulled for coal way below the houses. Workers got wages in the co-op store, wearing dollar hats as they waltzed through the door. They danced in pumps and they struck with banners and they ran us up a city with spans and spanners. When S. Sinton Lewis blew through his name, steel ran in rivers, coke marched in flame. Wharfies had a wire roof bloody with jags and took their hands home in Gladstone bags. Then the town breakdanced on earthquake feet and tottered on crutches down every street. We all sniffed coke back then for pay, but the city came up sadly when the smoke blew away. The horses up the valley and wines flowing down, clicking their glasses as a help for the town. Freighters queued off the port at all times. Up to Art Show became a social sway. The original people got a corner of a say, and the ocean spoke to circles in white-capped rhymes. I wrote a whole bunch of poems full of these nostril songs because I was trying to teach myself the sense of smell. I haven't got much of a sense of smell. And women generally have a better sense of smell than men anyway, but I've got a particularly cool one. And so I'll just read you two of the smell poems. mammal self portraits are everywhere, rubbed on and sprayed on. In an instant. Red by nose, they don't give the outline shapes demanded by that meaningless bird, the human. Without vegan eyes, we perceive them as smears or turds or nothing at all. Painted from inside, these portraits give the inner truth of their subject, with no reserve or lie. Warned or comforted or stirred, every mammal's an unfoolable connoisseur, with its fluids primed to judge. As it moves through an endless exhibition. Here's one of our perfumes. And this is what we call a macaronic poem, itself partly French. But you'll know all these perfumes. Elan, 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 the nostril caves that breathe stars in, and charm to spring the air guitar, tune wounds to sink, turn green men on, so right. Scent, wound scent, his hunter's yarn, not its influence. Nose does not close, adios, I guess. Oh, this one's a one line poem, the only one line. No stench is infra dog. It's already infamous. We had a storm on the coast in October 2002, and they're very rare on the North Coast, Eastern Australia in general. So I wrote this poem called A Levitation of Land. Haze went from smoke blue to beige gradually after midday. The inland was passing over high up and between the trees. The North Hills and the South Hills lost focus and faded away. As the inland was passing over, lungless flies, quizzing roadkill, got clogged with aerial plaster. Familiar roads ended in vertical paddocks, unfenced in abstraction. The sun was back to animating clay. The whole proud, fertile crescent inside the ranger's longbow offered up billion-ton cargo, compound of hoof prints and death, stark street whiskers, diesel and sweat. This finest skim of grout particles formed the lens, fuzzy with grind, a shield the length of northern Europe, and had the lift of a wing which traffic of thermal kept amassing over the mountains. Wrist, the shade of pitch and blind, sprinkled every scene. A dust bowl inverted in the sky shared the coast out in bushy airfield closes. A surfer from the 100-acre sea landed on the beach's narrow squeak and remade his hometown out of pastry. A sense of brown snake in the air. And dogs whisked, scanning their nose paper. Teenagers in the town foreshortening regained for moments their child voices. And in double image, Vanuatu to New Zealand, an echo Australia gathered out of the ocean, having once more scattered itself from its urn. Back building marble arts. Poor cock and jellyfish, poor cock. King Henry had a marital block. A dog in the manager dome knocked the Nile flows past Cairo. A rhyme is a pun that knows where to stop. Puns pick us with the glare of worlds too coherent to bear by any grown person. Nothing moved him like her before. It was like him and her before. Observe someone to a serving for. Cunning moves towards music. I figure if you're going to get into trouble for making puns, you might as well grab a whole body. It took me a long time to work out Melbourne. I was down on the recon, but it was very political. And I always get politics wrong, so I get booked down there even more than Sydney. I figured, yes, I know what it is. Melbourne was the capital of Australia for 27 years. And never got over it. It's still very political. Yes, right. So I wrote this poem called Melbourne Pavement Coffee. Only one thing to gloss for you here is there's a mention of a school with blue and yellow stripes on a tomato background. And that's Scotch College. Okay, stories over stories without narrative. An estuarine vertical imperative plugged into vast salt pans of pavement and higher, higher over the river, ignited words pouring down live. There an errand dog is running nose down like a pursuit car. Police car, central city. Trams that look always oncoming stop and stand shimmering like symbols after the mesh of their fare. Here posture is better, sitting is thicker. And footmen are said to survive behind oaks up the odd gravel road. We saw a wall of tomato blazerbacks, striped blue and yellow, ranged right across their school stage, just like an inland rain painting. We heard our grandest parliament sigh down Burke Street, "My country, why did you leave me and change at Albury?" History made here touch the world. Now the noted capital bleeds politics. Burnett's immune system was right wing. Down the microphone, black ice cream cone. Down the city camera, new age Michael. Not housing, but characterful houses, lace trimmed like thickly staved houses. Rain when beer went with prey. Now the crayfish are Formula One cars, flat out in raging procession. We're off to where the river learns and teaches the bay. A violent history of Australia. Braulgu, Katachuta, Lutano, Cape Nerwin, Abrolhos, Crota Aylant, Botany Bay, Cook, Banksia, Kangaroo Ground, Sydney Cove, Broad Arrow, Yucal Bay, China Walls, Sod Walls, Hungerford, Cedar Party, Talon Bend, Jack Edgery, Loveday, Darwin, Kilmany. Come by chance, Lower Plenty. Eureka, Darling Downs, Dinner Plain, Telegraph Point, Alice, Mary Farms, Diamantina, Combo Waterhole, Delegate, Federal, Spear and Cop, Elmansburg, Floria, Emu Lights, Something I noticed, I was doing a book with the National Gallery, and I've kind of noticed it before about Australian whitefella art, you know, not Aboriginal art, but up there. Too often around the galleries, I call it. Blokes and Sheilas, popping lips, walk the national comic strip. Whitefella art is half cartoons, and satire, a picket line of goons. Ridicule crops dust as possums. A couple of little short ones. Tired from understanding life, the animals approach man to be mystified. A spider walking in circles is celebrating the birthday of logic. Lying back so smugly, phallic, the ampersand in the deck chair of itself. The best love poems are known as such to the lovers alone. At a heart, salted land is caused by human tears. Filling the form, the single man asks his mother, "Mom, what sex are we?" Leaf brings. A client looks again at a photo, decides, puts it into a file box, which he then ties shut with string, and the truth is years away. A natal long road is rowed upstream, where jellied mirrors catch a light all over sandstone river walls. And the truth is years away. A 1-inch baby clings to glass on the rain side of a window as a man halts being led from office. But the truth is years away. Our youngest was still child-sized when starched rims of the red locust last nodded over this pond in the sunny greens. And the truth is years away. The last time I'll read you from this book, and I'll finish up with just a couple of poems, slightly older, is about a poetry reading. Or it starts out by the name. It's called Postmortem. I was upstaged in Nottingham after reading poetry there. By what lay in the porter's room above? Ginger human skeletons, eight of them. Disturbed by extensions to the art centre and reassembled from the dozer's show, some might have been my ancestors, Nottingham being where my mother's people fled from in the English Civil War. These were older than that migration, crusty little round heads of sleep, stick bundles half burned to clay by water. Their personhoods had gone into the body of that promised bridge to them. What had stayed in their bones were their diseases. The marks of labour in a rope furrowed shoulder blade. Their ages when they died and what they'd eaten. Bread, bacon, beer, cheese, apples, greens. No tomato atoms in them. No potato ends. No coffee yet or tea or aspirin. But alcoholic curds, horn spoon at a fair. An opium physic and pea porridge. The thought that in some cells their programming might persist my far heritage. Attracted me no more than rebuilding faces for them with wire and moulding. Unsatisfied to go as a detective to the past, I want the past live. With the body we have in the promise, that book which opens when the story ends. Being even a sound modern physique is like owning an apartment in Venice. I'll read you a couple of poems from here and then you can stop. You want a question, Simon? The meaning of existence. Everything except language knows the meaning of existence. Trees, planets, rivers, time, and nothing else. They express it moment by moment as the universe. Even this fool of a body lives in his heart and would have full dignity within it, but for the ignorant freedom of my talking mind. Portrait of a Felspar coloured cat. Plaintive, she named herself Mien in the reaching down world. Her texture manages itself. Her comet tail is Abyssinian. All her intelligence is elegance. The lockdown question. Why does God not spare the innocent? The answer to that is not in the same world as the question. So you would shrink from me in terror if I could answer. Pop music. Empty as a country town street after five. Two or three crisp high heel walkers and a pair of little girls in the station wagon. One bunging a pop bottle, blinked against the head and popped against the wagon. The other blows music in the hearse. Do ro the ho to. But no throw the word yet. This is the last poem I wrote in the 20th century for the study of the nude. Someone naked with you will really be a nude. A nude is never with just one. Nude looks back at everyone or no one. Aubergine or bluish rose, a nude is a generalization. Someone has given their name and face to be face all over. To be the face of something that isn't for caressing, except with the mind's hand. Nude is the full dress of undressing. Visitor. He knocks at the door and listens to his heart approaching. Jellyfish. Glow, 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 glow. Soft glass bowls upside down over serves of nutty udder and teats under the surface of the sun. And finally, last of all, the moon man. Shadowy kangaroos moved off as we drove into the top paddock, coming home from a wedding under a midnightish curved sky. Then his full face clear, moon man, the first birth ever, who still massages his mother and sends her life. For his having been born fully grown, his brilliance is in our blood. Had Earth fully healed from that labour, no small births could have happened. Thank you. There you go. What would you like to know, Evan?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
That's with all the towns in Australia. How did you choose those? Because I didn't think anyone knew Sodwell.
Yes, what?
The town called Sodwell.
Sodwell?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The postcode book. Postcode book knows where you are. Wonderful little fellow.
It's a wonderful place, Sodwell.
I was looking for names that were not Aboriginal and not British, steering between them to what I call Creole names, you know, sort of names born here. There were one or two Aboriginal names in that list. Jack Adgery and Kilmany, Kilmany Scots. Jack Adgery is one, and Curl Curl is another. But I de-emphasised them. I wanted to go between those and the old British names, you know, like Richmond and stuff. There are five Richmonds in this. And just find the body indigenous, they use that word to mean something else now, the kind of the Creole Australian history. Okay. So,
Les, just a question. I wonder how a poet at this time we're living now can remain unpolitical.
I don't really, but I try to keep away from it because it gives me depression. And I think it comes out, and sometimes it comes out of depression too. An awful lot of political poetry around the place is depressive. It's, I have to watch it. I stumbled into it more than once, and now I look back and wish I hadn't. And there is an existing demand in the culture that you be political too.
Yeah, I just want to mention that at the opening of the Penn meeting in Berlin just recently, Pontegrass said the foreign politics of America is run by dangerous fools. Gefährliche Narren, he used to call in German. How would you react to something like that?
We wasn't it. <All right. laughs> It came from the danger of being a world power. And also the terrible danger of ideology. You ask, I think you always have to ask, what time is a person in? You know, what time is the country in? What is its vision? What is its inspiration? You know? And then the next question I ask is, how much human sacrifice is it going to require?
Yeah.
And, I even ask that of poets, you know, works of art. You know, is this thing on a course death or death and killing, or is it has got closure? Does it not need those? Does it not need any blood? W.B. Yeats was haunted by the same question. You know, he wrote about the Irish uprising and asked himself later, did some of his verses cause people to die? He is a great warrior. So you have to be very careful. Politics can get mortal real quick. So.
You say you regret writing
political. I'm sorry, what?
You said you regret writing political poems.
Yeah.
I wonder if you think of, I can't remember its name, but the poem in which you talk about feral poetry and moral power of this one shining victory.
Yeah.
Is that a political poem?
Any political poem on the book. Yeah, it's about poetry itself, and the difference I make between poems as works of art and these larger things, which I'm very much very poetic really, but they're open-ended, and some of them can require death, a lot of death, and yeah, feral poetry, as I call it. It's hard to find out words for that distinction, I think they're there. Of course, Thomas Mann said that in the 20th century the spirit of man would express itself mainly in politics. Thank God we're out of the 20th century. I look back at the body count of the 20th century and it runs to hundreds of millions of people killed by politics. I hope the 21st is not going to be as bad. So you're all questioned out. I'll be here. He was trying to say was say was a crime.
The trees are being clear-filled, so I guess they're happy. I said the trees are being clear-filled, so I guess they're not correct to be happy today. But you mentioned, in any event, you mentioned W.B. Yeats, who, as I understand, meditated fairly beautifully about death.
About death?
About death.
Yeah. Are we all right about death?
Do you think that, I mean, I know you do, and I know it's both of you as well, but do you think that Australian poetry today is actually connecting with human experience, or do you think too often it's declaiming about politics?
Too often it's declaiming about politics. But where I get hope from is the wild poets out there, not the feral ones, the wild ones out there who are not usually in careers, you know, people you've never heard of. And I did a couple of anthologies, you know, Best Poems of 2005, Best Poems of 2004. But I found half the content was people I've never heard of. Just came across good poems. I just put their name under it, you know, just the name I found under there. And good poems are being written in a non-career way. Okay? And it confirmed me in the thought that I was more interested in poems than in books. You get organised into careers, and it can be a bit of a cut. So I think poetry is more to be trusted than career. The clear field, I don't know, is that still happening? All we've got to do is, you won't get rid of the play by protesting and marching. You'll get rid of the play inventing a substitute for wood-based paper. Pick up a way of making paper without wood, because it's paper that does it, more than anything else. And computers, which we were told were not going to use paper, use more of the paper than almost anything in the planet. Hey, I wouldn't mind seeing all the forest. Actually, where I come from, it's all forestry country, and none of us clear field. In fact, it's the forests are getting sick because they haven't had enough cutting. They need a few big bushfires, and if they can't get cutting, they need bushfires to Australian forests need it, you know, to get rid of the parasites and the weak growth and clean them up. The Aborigines would have said, oh, they're dirty, they need to clean up. Look at a beast country and say, yeah, that country's dirty. Need a fire to it.
Yeah. As you mentioned that you prefer poetry to poets, is there a fraternity of poets or
they love each other like so much. Nothing like having a photo to trust. Unless it's having fun. But there's a lot of that goes on. There is a bit of fraternity around, maybe if you cut it occasionally. But, there's been some terrible wars in it too. Some English commentator said that modern poetry is like Jekyll fighting over a dry waterhole. Not quite that bad, but it can get like that. And all the publicity that surrounds it, like people don't get in on the poetry, they get in on the ill will and fostering. More praise of poetry and less analysis of all the irrelevances that surround it. I think we'd be better off. I think we'd be better off in our newspapers if we had lots of poetry and almost no criticism.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's something. There used to be poetry in the UK. We don't see much now.
The New England.
I'm sorry?
There's a New England paper, a little paper put out by a New England.
It's a beauty, yeah. You're right.
On poetry.
Yeah.
I subscribe to that, and it's very good.
Yeah. There are honourable exceptions. So there are magazines in Australia which don't have criticism at all. Poetry as well.
So you do see that.
Yeah, you do. And it would be marvellous if there were more of it. Blue Dog has very little criticism in it. Rialto in England has almost no criticism in it. The more the merrier. We should have more of it. People are scared they couldn't sell such a magazine, but I mean, if you kept the standard up, you could. Yeah.
Where do you feel happiest? Is it outside in the field observing, or is it actually in front creating?
Probably sitting down at the desk being profound. down for those. You know, I have only extremely good visual memory and being profoundly lazy, I like sitting at the desk and bringing it all back to myself, pulling it all up. Nothing like it.
So, I'm asking a different question, away from politics. I think I'm going to go into that.
Yeah.
Have you read the review of Peter Craven in the review this weekend in the Australia?
Ooh.
Have you read it?
I read it.
And he says that you are actually amongst all the writers you mentioned. It was quite a survey, as you know. You are actually the only candidate for winning the Nobel Prize. What do you think about that?
Last time I read Peter Craven, he was profoundly wrong, and he probably used this one. I don't do it a lot. Yeah, I don't think about Nobel Prizes. I think your career's over when that happens. You know, they come around and cover you with concrete and make you into a statue, and that's the end of it. I asked Seamus about it once. He said, oh, it lasts about 2 years later. He said, they drive you mad for 2 years, and then they leave you alone. But you never, nobody ever trusts your work again, because they think, oh, no, this is not a poem by Seamus Heaney, this is a poem by Seamus Heaney Nobel Prize. He has to die before they're born, honestly. But. So. I'm sorry, will you speak up? I'm terribly deaf.
About
education.
You say the politics can be a trap, but can't also definition be a trap? Why can't anything be subject to poetry?
Why can't just anything be called poetry?
Why can't anything be subject to good
poetry? Oh yes, anything can be. That was the great breakthrough of London. That you didn't have to have a list of set subjects anymore. You could have a go at writing about anything. The first thing I tried writing about was the raindrops on the oil railway tracks at Gloucester railway station. I just wanted to get those contrasting textures. And that was very unusual, because most young kids wanting to write a poem at the age of 18 want to write about a girlfriend or something. But, I started at the right end. I got hold of the right end of the stick. It was in rubbish in the right direction. But yes, you can write that in, sure. Yeah. As long as you make it work, as long as you make the poetry of it. Anyway, folks, will that do for a rock? I am really terribly deaf, and one place to stay in England, they asked me about reading culture, and of course I misheard it and told them all about New Zealand culture. It didn't take me long because I didn't know much about it. Yeah.
If you just stay seated while I get led down to the dining table, and then you can all fire up the back and get it done.
Oh, wonderful.